Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today we have three separate newsy guys. Howard Stutz from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, and both Jeffrey Compton and Ken Adams from CDC, GamingReports.com. We'll be roundtabling the matters of what happened in 2015 in gambling news and what's about to happen in 2016. Gentlemen, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Nice to see you. Thank you for having me again.
All right.
Thank you.
Before we discuss that, there was recently a court ruling in Illinois that's a nice Christmas present to APs. Richard, why don't you tell us about that?
So it was a case where a couple of players were arrested for playing hole card. And Bob Loeb, a friend of the show, guest on the show, was the attorney. And anyway, the prosecution presented their case, and the judge stopped it at that point and declared them not guilty. So, again, this is another state that has come out and said that seeing the dealer's hole card is not illegal, and they did bring up the fact that the players were signaling to each other. That also is not illegal, so now we do have another state where there's a precedent. And so my hat's off to Bob Loeb, and that should be good news to all table game players out there. You have any comment on that?
Yes, I do. Somebody asked me a question about a month ago in regards to, it's the 20th anniversary of the movie Casino. And in the movie Casino, there are two guys who are beaten up, but they said that is what they were doing legal, which, remember, one was seated at another table and was signaling using an electronic device. Is that legal?
Okay, so that is called spooking when you're observing the whole card from another table. So there are two issues there. One of them, they were using an electronic device. That definitely is now illegal,
okay.
Although that law didn't change until 1985.
Right.
But the conventional wisdom of people on the internet is that spooking in itself is illegal, but there has never been a case that I'm aware of that where someone has actually – where that has been tested.
Uh-huh.
So people sort of assume it is, but I don't know of any case where it's actually been tested. So
if I get caught, I'll take it to court.
Well, the other thing is the dealers no longer check under their hold card, so really
right.
The opportunity doesn't – really exist anymore. So,
All right. So, all three of our guests today are knowledgeable and fluent. So, we're going to have to kind of take turns giving them each questions. So, we're going to start off with Ken Adams, with respect to millennials and skill games. What happened in 2015 and what do you see happening in 2016?
In the first place, Nevada passed regulations allowing for skill-based games. And in at G2E, we got our first look at the skill-based games that are being proposed now. They very much resemble the games that we might have seen 25 years ago. Pac-Man and pinball were the predominant games. However, the first round is, or the first few rounds, is going to be back and forth between the gaming regulators and the manufacturers as they try to find games that work and games that can be approved. As to whether or not they're going to appeal to millennials, this generation of games isn't, but that's the ultimate goal.
Very good. Do you have a comment, Jeff?
Yes, and I think we've discussed this before with the new games. A lot of it will be not so much the new games appealing to millennials, but selling them to the casinos, which is, put it frankly, they don't want any more blackjack or video poker. Okay, they've had enough of that problem that they don't want a game that brings in the same set of issues where somebody can get good enough to make a steady living off of it. So,
right, although none of the games that I saw at G2E,
right.
Was there any chance of
that? I know that, but
yeah.
They'll have to really sell
there were some pinball
the...
games. There were some pinball games where you could...
Where theoretically you could actually have an edge over the house.
Especially if you invited some really bad friends who... Because it was a pool of players. So if you had a lot of bad players to donate to, this, the good players could cream it off. So if you have really... bad players, then...
Okay, because a lot of the games I looked at, they actually showed the house edge. So, for example, there was like a Scrabble game where the better you were at Scrabble, and it would tell you, like, the really bad players are playing at, you know, a 92% return. I mean, yeah, 92% return, and the good players are getting a 96% return. But still, the players aren't ever winning.
I didn't know Scrabble was a millennial game.
Well,
my wife would have gone nuts.
Words with friends, Jeffrey. Words with friends. That's the game that they're talking. That's the game that they're talking about.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Words with benefits. There we
words
go.
With benefits. Okay.
All right. So let's change subjects.
I'm sorry. Okay. While we're on the subject of millennials and what's coming up, there's this whole new thing that Wynn is trying to do where he's created this new area at the Encore.
Yeah, he's doing a new nightclub and it's a new kind of club area for millennials. Caesars is trying this where they announced that the CEO of Caesars said this at G2E, that they were going to create these areas for millennials at different casinos that are trying them out. They wouldn't say where or what, but they were just, you know, these millennial type games, these tabletop games that look like giant iPhones, like you guys were, like we were discussing, and they're social interactive and a bar and music, and that's what they're trying. That's what they're trying, and to see if that works to bring in customers. Not just there, but in the restaurants and the nightclubs and all that.
Has this opened at the Encore yet?
I don't think it has. I'm not real sure. I haven't popped in there lately to see, but I'm not real sure if it has or not. But it's something that's, I think we're going to see a lot more of this. It's going to be a slow process. You're going to see these games on the casino floors in the next year, but you're not going to walk into a casino one day and the next day it's going to be look completely different with all these crazy new type products. It's going to be a very, very slow process. Some of these games haven't even got through gaming approval yet. I mean, it's a long process for this to happen, but we'll see it. This is just going to be a process. You're going to see in a lot of different properties to try to bring millennials, try to do something to draw that customer into the, not just the casino, but the restaurants and everything else.
All right. So you've been hearing Howard Stutz there. So we're going to direct the next question to Howard relating to Caesars Entertainment, who's looking for creative ways to go bankrupt.
They didn't look for creative ways. They did that to themselves. They did that a long time ago.
So tell us what's happened in 2015 and what do you think is going to happen in 2016?
Well, in 2015, back in January, Caesars put Caesars Entertainment Operating Company, one of their largest operating division, includes about almost a dozen regional casinos, maybe more than that. Caesars at Palace is the only casino here in Las Vegas that's in it. Caesars Atlantic City, Harrah's Reno, I mean. They all went into a Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization. Caesars is trying. Remember, Caesars has almost $23 billion in long-term debt. They picked that all up when they went private in that private equity buyout a couple years back in 2008. They moved a lot of properties all around different operating divisions in the last couple of years. most of the debt, about 19, almost 20 billion of it, is tied to Caesars Entertainment Operating Company, CEOC. That'll be the easy way for me to, so I don't have to spit all over myself trying to say this a dozen times. They put CEOC into Chapter 11. They want to convert it into a REIT, and where they would operate it, and there'd be basically they're going to shed about $10 billion in debt is the idea. They put them in January. This is going to drag out now into 2016. We're probably going to be talking about it when we're sitting here a year from now. We'll be still talking about Caesars and what's going on with their bankruptcy. There are lawsuits pending by a lot of the junior level bondholders that don't like this because they're going to get basically cut out of a lot of this stuff. So they're filing these lawsuits. There's court cases going on that could put the whole company into Chapter 11, all of Caesars, that if something happens with these court cases. This is just going to be a long process of dragging out over the next, that we're going to see dragging out throughout 2016.
And Jeffrey, you had an article today, right, about
yes.
Harry Reid?
Yes. We Aaron Stanley, who is out of Washington, wrote the article that Harry is trying to get through as part of the big omnibus spending bill that they have to pass, digest. He's added a rider that would make their bankruptcy easier as far as other bankruptcies.
Gee, I wonder what his next employer is going to be.
And Ken, you had some interesting perspectives on Harry.
Well, Harry is Nevada, and he's done a very good job of solving problems for Nevadans all along. And this is typical of what he's done. He's used whatever power or skills he has to further the agenda of Nevadans. And he certainly looks at Caesars as being and this is his swan song. He's going out, and it is not at all surprising that he is trying to do something for Caesars at this particular time. And as someone says, this is speculation, he might end up with a board seat.
So he should have a lucrative retirement from politics.
Certainly, it is typical of what Harry Reid has done for his whole career. He's done whatever he could for his constituents in Nevada.
Well, there's a question of whether this will, I think Elizabeth Warren, senator from Massachusetts, is may not be on board on this right now. So the question is whether they're going to get this into this. This omnibus spending bill, as Jeffrey said, it's a huge bill that they have to pass because it covers all the spending, and senators are always trying to tuck stuff into this in the last few days of the year. So we'll see if it makes it in there. I mean, the fact that it's come out right now, in Washington, we don't know if it'll happen or not.
All right, Jeffrey, is Las Vegas making a comeback?
Depends on which direction you look.
Let's look north.
Okay, let's look south.
Oh, okay.
Okay. There seems to be lots of green sprouts coming out of the Tropicana. Okay. I mean, I drove past there last time. I mean, they seem to, who owns it?
Penn National.
Penn National.
It seems to be making a good attempt at turning around the Tropicana. Okay. City Center is finally, coalescing to be something worthwhile. Okay, moving up the thing. We have Caesar's problems, but we have was it that I read the owner of Treasure Island turned down an attempt to buy the place? So there are lots of signs.
No, he was trying to buy the Mirage.
He was trying to buy the Mirage, but it sounds like people are interested in buying and selling stuff and not at cheap prices. Now we get past Encore, okay, up to the North Strip. And also good news on the South Strip is the arena.
Exactly. Arena opens April, or beginning of April.
Yes.
The first event.
So,
and parking will be starting in 2018.
Well, come on, you're going to have to walk. That's what Jim Murin says. Get off your butts and walk. So that's his. And the idea is they're going to, with the parking with the arena, they're hoping to attract people from, to park, to go into all these restaurants. They're creating this whole park area that with restaurants and shopping and all this that go in toward the arena. If you've ever been to Los Angeles, the LA Live that surrounds the Staples Center, very much that same type of aspect brings. You don't just go down there for the game. You're down there or the concert. You're down there for dinner and then afterwards. So that's what they're hoping to do with this.
So, but as we move north of Encore, of course, we have the struggling SLS. We have the Fountain Blue Monument, which is now at least you know how much it will cost if you want to buy it. And we look, there's maybe a little progress going on with Resort World. Yes. And so, things are sort of...
We need you to move a little bit closer to the microphone.
Things are sort of moving along. And
Echelon, right?
Echelon, yeah. But on the other hand, the local casinos are doing very well. The downtown casinos, I was just looking at their numbers, and they're doing very well. Okay, so things are coming together. North Las Vegas just got a big boost that with the car factory. So coming in. So all in all, I think it's good. They just have one problem is the area from Sahara down to whatever.
Charleston. The old Stardust Drive.
Mm-hmm. And that's the area to work on. On the other hand, there's a lot of opportunity in that area.
Yeah, the key will be is if Resorts World actually starts construction next year. I mean, they were the Genting Group out of Malaysia bought the old Echelon site in March of 2013. They said, okay, we're going to look at it. We're looking at it. Then they got found suitable in 2014. And then this year in May, they did this big elaborate ceremonial groundbreaking, and nothing's been done other than they fixed the parking garage and finished that, which they say where they're going to house all the construction workers. If they move forward on Resorts World, that will spur some things along. When you get that kind of construction, that'll help. Riviera is going to come down here at some point with the convention center trying to, whatever they want to do, end up doing there. Now, that's going to get tied up in some ways. But all that, and then we'll see what happens with the Elan project, the site on the new Frontier site that was Andrew Pascal and James Packer and Oak Tree. We'll see what happens with that project if they move forward. So there is some life, as Jeffrey said, coming on the north end of the Strip. But he points it out correctly. The key areas that are doing well, the locals market is doing very well, and downtown is really recovered. And we'll see what happens. If Faraday starts construction next year, that was the we have a bet in the newsroom. Which happens first? Resorts World starts construction or Faraday? Everybody said Faraday. So we think
I'm lost. I don't even know what Faraday is.
Is the factory going up in North Las Vegas.
The new car company. Yeah.
There's nothing for you to play there.
Yeah. So. But Faraday's construction will bring new, obviously, construction jobs, will really help, the North Las Vegas casino market. When you think about Aliante and some of
There's the Fiesta, there's Santa Fe, there's
Cannery. That was the one I was trying to think of. Okay. Yeah, so it'll help those properties. So we'll see.
The what about Northern Nevada, Ken?
Well, Northern Nevada stopped being a casino market a long time ago in the Las Vegas sense. It's slowly retooling itself to become something quite different, and that will mean that a healthy economy built again around the same thing that Faraday is, a little larger project than Faraday. Tesla, yes. And we call it the Tesla effect because Tesla was the catalyst to several other companies coming in, high-tech companies coming in, plus the fact before Tesla there'd already been some movement in some warehousing and things that were getting to be significant. So Reno is retooling itself. I mean, the casinos that are left are going to have a much better market. Somebody asked me recently about the old John Esquagas Nugget, Sparks Nugget. And at one point, I was certain that would never make it, but with the change, there's a good chance that if they hang on long enough, there's going to be plenty of people living in their neighborhood to support that property too, and people coming in. The hotel rooms are getting more valuable. The one thing I'd say about Las Vegas is much of the two properties that you talked about, Genting and Packer, is dependent on the economy in the Far East and their ability to raise money. And Packer is not getting as warm a reception as he had thought, mainly because of the struggles with Macau. And so he's not getting the money quite as quickly as he thought he would. However, Genting said recently that they were on track with their funding.
Very good. Tesla, though, that's closer to Carson City than it is to Reno. The workers there would have to drive a long way to get to the Reno casinos, wouldn't they?
No, it's not closer to... No, it's east of Reno. Carson City is south, and we have a ring road here, so it's a pretty easy... Reno's a pretty easy town to get around in. It's not like Vegas. It doesn't have any of the traffic problems, and we have one easy road that you can drive all the way around Reno, about 75 miles total, but you can do it easily at highway speed, so it's very easy to get around Reno and get from one to another.
Showing my... disknowledge of Reno geography. I apologize. All right. Daily fantasy sports. Jeffrey, you spoke less than a month ago on this show about the daily fantasy sports, and at that time it was in flux. Well, it still is.
You know, if they get screwed anywhere, they'll get screwed. You know, it's up to you, New York, New York. They lost the first round legally. In New York, they won they got a stay until the full appeals court can hear them in New York. They've been getting a much more warm reception in Massachusetts, where the attorney general, who was very anti-casino, okay, extremely anti-casino.
Yes, but Robert Kraft is a big donator.
Oh, yes, yes. DraftKings is headquartered in Boston. But they're working with Boston on regulation. And somebody, I forget who I talked to, but they felt that eventually, this is just going to become state by state regulated.
That's okay. The way it looks right now. I mean, Nevada shut them down in October. Other state, but Nevada is such a small market. When you think of daily fantasy sports, you got to think of population, and so that's why when New York did what they did, when the Attorney General of New York shut them down for legal reasons, that became that's why they filed suit. They didn't file suit here in Nevada. It's kind of a good news for them. At least they can take whatever they want to call them, daily fantasy wagers until the end of the year. They can continue to do that.
No, it can't be wagering because it's not gambling.
Well,
don't you know that?
Yeah, I guess not. I think it's a lot of it's going to be tied because what we're going to see in the next year is a lot more discussion on sports wagering as a whole. In Congress, we may see some push. I mean, this is something the American Gaming Association is pushing. Now, they're going to hold back because the gentleman we mentioned earlier, Senator Reid, is a fan of PASPA, the act that was signed in 1992 that limits sports wagering to just four states, Nevada included. They don't want to do anything that's going to upset Reid, so they don't want to embarrass him as last year, so they're not really pushing for it. But the key will be New Jersey. New Jersey has filed suit. They're in the Third Circuit on a court of appeals to try to get sports wagering into Atlantic City casinos. It'll probably go to the U.S. Supreme Court. And when that would be the sense. That's what I think New Jersey's hoping. And if it does, that could be a Supreme Court ruling on PASPA, the legality, the constitutionality of PASPA, and that could change the whole landscape. And then you're going to see sports betting pop up everywhere. Daily fantasy is just going to become part of that. That's just my guess for what we're going to look forward to next year. I think daily fantasy became an impetus, kind of a push to help this along on sports wagering in the U.S.
Well, that'd be interesting.
That was one reason the AGA did not come out way against it.
No.
You noticed Jeff Freeman, the president, CEO, was sending out warning messages to, you know, don't get on this bandwagon of anti-sports.
They see it, you know, look, the idea that Nevada wants to keep sports betting out of other states is wrong, because these companies, especially companies like William Hill and CG Technologies that manage sports books, can easily drop their model into many of these casinos around the country in the regional markets, riverboats and commercial casinos everywhere around the country. And MGM has, you know, been a big casino in near Washington, D.C., out there in Maryland. You know, Caesars obviously has properties all over the U.S. I mean, the gaming industry would love to see sports betting get legalized nationally, because it becomes a bigger market for them. And it's not going to hurt Las Vegas sports betting nationally. I mean, you don't think? No. Are you going to go watch the first round of the NCAA tournament in Council Bluffs, Iowa? No offense to the friends in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Or are you going to come to Las Vegas? Of course, you're going to still come to Las Vegas.
Well, I don't know. If you live in Omaha,
well, if you're running for Nebraska, sure.
Well, but if you're Caesars, you have a casino there anyway. So,
exactly.
You know, so why is Harry Reid against it?
The understanding I heard was that he's tied and he believes past, but maybe he was in, I don't know, 92, was he? Yeah, he was probably in Congress then. Supported, he was a senator then, he supported PASPA. Believes in it and wants to leave it as is. He'll be gone in 2017, and then it might be able to move forward. And then again, the Supreme Court could turn the whole thing down.
Ken, on this one?
Well, I don't think anything's going to happen in this next year on any issue related to gambling in Congress. I don't think Congress is going to, and I'd be really surprised if the Supreme Court would hear any gambling-related case. It just isn't big enough to matter to anybody. Whoever said that it was going to go state by state, that's what it looks like it's going to happen, and every state is going to look at it differently. Nevada didn't say it was illegal. Nevada said it was gambling, and therefore it had to be regulated.
And somebody has taken
New York out. Said it was New York said it was illegal.
They didn't say
we're going to regulate. They said it was illegal. An entirely different take on it. Maryland has joined Massachusetts, and they're reviewing it. And I think now it's about equal number of states. I think there are about five on each side of the ledger that are looking at it. One side said, "Well, I think we can regulate it. I think it's okay to do." Another saying, "No, this is absolutely forbidden." And I expect the rest of next year to be look like that, as different states hold meetings on it and talk about it and think about how they could profit from it.
Yeah, Ken made a good point.
Like professional baseball, who thinks that what's that guy's name? Rose? He's a gambler. It doesn't belong.
He's
in
from
baseball.
Ohio. Watch it.
They can own stock in fantasy football leagues. How is that possible? It's a very complex issue that I certainly don't think it'll get resolved next year nationally, and I think every state will look at it differently according to their financial needs, just as baseball did. It's a place to make money. I think everybody's going to start thinking, how can we make money from it, not how can we stop it because it's against some principle.
Yeah, Ken makes a great point that it is. Nevada said it's legal. They just said you have to be licensed. That's it. And they ruled it on that sense. Now Vic Salerno, who's just joined became a member of the Gaming Hall of Fame, you know, famed sportsbook operator here. He has come up with an idea for a daily fantasy sports company, and he's filed the paperwork to be licensed for it with the state of Nevada. And then he wants to bring this in, you know, through kiosks and with other casinos. So we'll see what happens with that. But he's planning on trying to launch that, hopefully, he says, in next year for football season. So we'll see.
For DraftKings and FanDuel, it's a bit of a sticky wicket for them to, because for them to want to be licensed, they have to admit that it's gambling.
Well, and you know what? This is what so everybody keeps on getting lost. DraftKings got licensed in the United Kingdom as a gambling company.
Right.
You know, to take bets, I guess, or to take, you know, do daily fantasy soccer, I guess, or football. But I just, it's just, it's a, it's, you know, it, They don't want to admit they're gambling. They've tried, they've gone, because that's what when you look at the Daily Fantasy Sports Trade Association website, they go through every which way possible to point out that they're not gambling. It's game of skill, like chess, is what the head of DraftKings said. It's a game. That's what how he called Daily Fantasy. Yeah. So, yeah, it's something we'll still continue to see next year.
All right, so let's move on to a different subject. Security. There's been some terrorist attack, and Vegas may have heightened security over New Year's. Howard, do you know anything about this?
Yeah, it's interesting. New Year's Eve is always a big, here in Vegas. They shut down the strip. All the casinos do fireworks. Usually about a week or so out, they announce, what the fireworks show is going to be like, the shutdown of the strip, and they talk about security. They talk about, a heightened security. After the what happened in San Bernardino, the shooting, the terror, the terrorist incident down there, the governor Sandoval announced immediately that there would be heightened security with National Guard troops on the Strip in Las Vegas for New Year's Eve, and I think he did that for a sense of that the casinos were worried that people are going to get panicked and might cancel reservations, might not travel over New Year's, or the fear of, after what happened in San Bernardino. And, you saw what happened, we're taping this on Tuesday. Los Angeles got a bomb threat and shut down the entire school system today in California. So, it's that type of fear. I think that's why Governor Sandoval did what he did and announced, there's going to be heightened security on the Strip. I don't think it'll be any more than it has been. We see a lot of heightened security. All metros on call. It's safe. It's safe. And, people are going to be out there. A lot of people. It's on the Strip downtown. So, I don't expect to see anything different this year.
You brought up a point on another radio or television show, though, that this Las Vegas and the owners and the operators and everybody in the business has to be very concerned about this, because a minor fire on the top of the Cosmopolitan, which just burned up some phony palm trees, nobody was hurt. I don't think anybody was taken to the hospital. Made worldwide news. So there has to be, it won't take much to get the reputation of being unsafe.
That's correct, because as Jeffrey points out, the Cosmopolitan fire, I just remember, was, it wasn't fire at the Cosmopolitan, it was fire on the Las Vegas Strip. And that, because immediately, that's the national headlines. Anything happens with Vegas, it's fire on the Las Vegas Strip. So Jeffrey's right. An incident in Las Vegas is something that just scares the living out of the game.
Well, that can't possibly be true, because what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Everybody knows that. All right. Elections. We
have a big Republican debate tonight, and as Ken mentioned, the nothing
actually
will happen.
Excuse me, Richard. Ken, did you want to speak up? Ken is on the phone, so he can't wave his hands, or if he is waving his hands to speak, I don't see them. Did you have anything to speak about on the security issue?
No. I agree with everybody that the perception is what Nevada worries about, and making it seem that we're doing everything possible and there is no threat will be everybody's top priority. They don't want any cancellations. They want New Year's to go off as planned. But
I don't see anything else
they could do, unless they put scanners on people coming into the airport instead of people going out and start checking everybody coming in. Town. I don't see, and I certainly don't see any measures coming up now.
All right, Richard, you were talking about Republican debate. They might mention terrorism tonight a little bit.
They might mention terrorism at the debate, yes. But, Ken was mentioning he didn't think anything would happen in Congress this year because, it's an election year. So, yeah, we have the big election coming up, and what's that tell us about gambling?
The AGA has been doing this whole get out the vote campaign. It's been actually an interesting effort that they've done this. They've really, they've never taken this type of step before, and where they're now they've sent out a questionnaire and they're asking candidates about gaming issues, and it's interesting because you have candidates, for the first time, that actually have, you can rate them on their, on how they've treated, how they've treated and how they've been kind of interaction with the gaming industry. The governor of Ohio was governor during all their expansion. He came into office and immediately demanded the casinos pay more in taxes, and Penn National and Caesars, Rock Gaming did. O'Malley on the Democratic side was governor of Maryland during their expansion. Donald Trump owned casinos, though. But he says he got out of Atlantic City when he did.
Well, yeah, Bush doesn't go to them.
Yeah, and Bush doesn't like gambling. We had Governor Bush, Governor Bush, Ted Cruz, and Carly Farina in our edit board, and I got to question them these last couple of days about their stances on internet gaming on the RAWA bill in Congress. It's kind of interesting. They kind of tried to have it both ways. They said it's a states' rights issue, that gambling expansion is up to the states, but maybe they don't like internet gambling, but because they want to appeal to the owner of the Venetian of the Sands, who really hates internet gambling. So I don't know. But it is interesting that the AGA is really pushing candidates, trying to push the gaming industry.
Did a poll of employees.
Yeah, employees. Who do they support? The employees said they support Trump and Hillary. So they felt with them on gaming issues.
Would
so,
Trump allow Muslims to gamble?
Muslims aren't supposed to gamble.
Yeah, they don't gamble. They're not supposed to gamble. Actually, Donald Trump doesn't own any of his the only one casino that's still part of Trump Entertainment, Atlantic City. Remember, he just licensed his name because, as he said many times in the debate, he got out while the getting was good, and that was in Atlantic City.
Ken, what do you know about the elections?
Well, what I'd say about this is the AGA's effort has changed the nature of the way the industry has traditionally dealt with politics. In the past, we met with the candidates one-on-one and said, what do you do? What's your stance on this? And based on that, we said, yes, we'll give you money. No, we won't. We generally never said we won't give you any money. We just gave more money to the other guy. And we always did that behind closed doors. I attended a meeting once a long time ago where all the industry was there at Lake Tahoe, and we talked about which candidates to support and which ones not to support, and we rated them. But never before have we done it out in public and forced the candidates in public to take positions on it. And I'm really impressed with what the AGA has been able to accomplish with this tactic. Whether or not it makes any difference or not in the long run, I don't know. But it certainly has brought the issues out. So anybody who supports gaming, who works in gaming, or owns properties can make a choice of who they're going to support based on this effort. I applaud them for what they managed to accomplish so far.
Do the views split down party lines, or are they kind of all over the?
I think they're all over the map. It seems. Jeb Bush has said straight out, "I don't like gambling." He said on the internet gambling issue, he's also for states' rights, which is a very strong Republican stance, and he's kind of wishy washy on that sense. Where you have others that are, Marco Rubio was interesting. He is a signer. He's a sponsor of the RAWA bill, the Restore the Wire Act bill in Congress. But then he told us, he said, which would wipe out internet gambling in the U.S. It would shut down the legal markets in Nevada and New Jersey and Delaware. But then he said, but I can support poker because it's a game of skill. And there's no carve out for poker. So it's they're kind of all over the place on this. It's fascinating to listen to it, listen to them. And like Ken said, I think it's amazing that the AGA has taken this step, is pushing them in this direction. And it's something that they're going to follow, especially when you look at the both conventions next year in Ohio. A gambling state, right down, the one in Cleveland's going to be the Republican convention will be right down the street from the Caesars, the Horseshoe Casino in Cleveland. It's not Caesars doesn't own anymore. It's going to be an issue that we're going to see throughout the year. I'm not sure how much, but it's good for the industry to see this.
All right.
Well, on the subject of elections.
Yes, Jeffrey.
What's usually very interesting, and we won't know we've just gotten the first glimmer, is the state issues that arise related to gambling. New Jersey is thinking of putting something on the ballot that will allow casinos outside of Atlantic City. And so usually by this time, there might be another Massachusetts something on the ballot related to gaming. So that's always interesting how those develop over between now and the election.
All right, we're going to take a quick break now. We've been talking to Howard Stutz, Ken Adams, and Jeffrey Compton. I encourage you to stick around. The stories we're talking about after the commercials will be in the category of fun stories in 2015. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. From now until December 30th, players may use accumulated points to get half off of almost everything at South Point, including hotel, restaurants, liquor stores, spas, salons, etc., etc. This coming Saturday, December 18th, the South Point is celebrating their 10th anniversary. Free cake and champagne at the Grandview Lounge with music provided by West Winners. This next one isn't gambling, but I think it's kind of cool. Next Wednesday, December 23rd, the Budweiser Clydesdales will be there for you to take pictures of and with. If that's not enough, there'll be free Budweiser, hot chocolate, and apple cider at the Palms. The typical Friday night drawings will be a little bit different. First of all, you earn double drawing entries Tuesdays through Fridays in December from 4 to 6 and 5 times drawing entries between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. on Saturdays. Perhaps the biggest change in the drawings is created by Christmas and New Year's Day falling on a Friday. So this year there'll be drawings on Saturday, December 26th, and Saturday, January 2nd, rather than on the holidays themselves. For the third time this month, Thursday, December 17th, they will have a mystery multiplier. Swipe at the kiosk, get a multiplier from 2x to 15x. It's a limit of 40,000 adjusted points per day on video poker. No limits on reels. PFP, play for prizes. Through this Friday, December 18th, you earn TJ Maxx cards. And from December 21st to January 1st, you earn cash. Up to $190 a day, you keep the points. Cash is earned at the rate of 0.2%. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play a lot of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. It's a good place to practice quick quads, for example. You can get the strategy from me or from Shaq's website, but if you want the correction, go to videopoker.com. The game of the week is Spin Poker Dream Card. Spin Poker is a nine-line game. You play it just like regular video poker, but the pay lines zig and zag over three separate rows of cards. Dream Card is a 10-coin-per-line game where periodically you get a dream card. It's your fifth card, which means it's the best possible card given the first four. Because of the dream card, you get a lot more royal flushes and a lot more four-of-a-kinds than you normally do. But it's a 10-coin-per-line game, and that makes up for it. Slightly better EV-wise to play dream card than the base games. No strategy variations are required. When spin poker and dream card are combined, it's a 90-coin game, which means $22.50 for a quarter player. All right, let's go back to what we call fun stories. We're going to let you lead off with this one, Jeffrey. There was a guy who dressed up as a security guard because he wanted a lousy $500,000. What happened there?
He dressed up as a security guard. It was never clear if he was in a uniform of the Greek town. It happened outside of Greek town.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And the papers seem to be very careful about how they describe this. For example, was the robbery from Greektown? Was it Greektown money in the armored car? But supposedly they were loading an armored car and or unloading an armored car. That was it. And a gentleman came up in a security uniform that looked very much like Greektown's and helped himself put the money and drove away. And, he didn't use a gun. Nobody got hurt. There's some money missing. Now, as I remember, money usually coming from that comes in armored cars is traceable. Okay? Mm-hmm. So he might have trouble getting rid of it over the years. And
well, it's only 500 thou. Hey, guys.
Yeah. But obviously, we'll have to be some financial security discussions in Detroit.
You know, that reminds me of a story I heard when the Riviera first opened. Apparently, a couple of guys, you know, it was quite a bit of a madhouse, and a couple of guys just walked into the pit and started standing around like pit bosses and stood around for the first hour or so and then started going up to the cage and ordering fills of 10,000, 20,000 in chips. And then as they would walk back to the pit, they would just drop those racks into the big purse of some woman who, and apparently the money was never recovered. So, yeah. Those, everything old is new again.
those mob casino days, the good old days.
Yeah, I will admit, because of that, I would be afraid of doing that. You know, as we discussed with the movie Casino, they handled cheaters differently than they do now. At least, hopefully, better than they do now.
Yeah.
All right. There's a $300,000. Comped dinner, I think.
No, not a comp.
Not a comp.
They paid for it.
They paid for a $300,000 dinner. Howard, what do you? Were you invited?
I wish. Apparently, some pretty good wine was served at this dinner. This was bizarre. During the MGM earnings call, I think it was the first quarter call or fourth quarter back. I forget what was it, February or something. Whatever it was, Jim Murren's just anecdotally talking about why he sees signs that the Strip was doing better and the MGM properties were doing better. And he drops this item about a $300,000 dinner bill at one of the restaurants at Bellagio. And so I wrote about it. I mean, he's like, well, this is kind of interesting. You know, he drops this out. You know, he's not going to, doesn't say anything, doesn't announce who it is. Turns out to be what the editor or the publisher or whatever, Vice. I forgot the guy's name. But it was, you know, and I can't remember, was the New York Times outed him? I think it was the New York Times columnist outed him as the guy who had the $300,000 dinner bill. It turned out to be like wines and you know, it was in one of the most expensive restaurants, Bellagio. So it was just fascinating that got so much play about all of a sudden this, you know, this is the sign of times that things are coming back in Vegas, that somebody's dropping, you know, a $300,000 bill at dinner. Now that's, you know, it could have, you know, we laughed. I mean, maybe, you know, who knows what goes on in some of these, you know, the high end rooms during the Mayweather fights and all that. You know, you see, you know, that kind of money being spent. But it was just kind of funny. But that the CEO of one of the biggest companies on the Strip would bring this up in an earnings call was fascinating.
It's also fascinating, and Ken will agree. You know, Ken has more of a history with this than we do.
More of a history with $300,000
dinners. $300,000
dinners.
No, more of a history of in dealing with high rollers and high spenders. But the years ago, do you remember there was a show on television for a couple of years? It wasn't called Vegas. It was called
Las Vegas with James Caan.
Yes. And one of the staff of the Las Vegas Advisor, I can't remember whom, if it was Dee Castleman or Anthony Curtis or one of the other ones, did a quick memo the next day of all the mistakes in the first show. And one, you know, okay.
Sounds like something Anthony would do.
Yeah. And one of the mistakes was they were calling players' names using Mr. So-and-so loudly on the floor to high rollers. I mean,
rather than Mr. C.
Mr. C. And so so what I'm saying is, you know, Mr. S or Mr. Stutz might not be telling his wife he's dropping
$300,000. I don't have $30 to drop right now.
But the point is that the idea of a casino, you know, the head of a casino company even discussing this is rather new. Would you agree with me, Ken?
Yes, but first about the show. On the show Vegas, there it was in the old Maxim.
You're talking about the old Dan Tam of Vegas?
And they said Mr. Douglas. And it was all right to say Mr. Douglas because Mr. Douglas was one of the investors. He owned 20% of the property at the time. But yes, I think he would be one of the only ones that even today that the head of a major company or any size casino would ever identify a specific that could be traced to an individual spending. It's just, this is the direct opposite of what happens in Vegas, stays in Vegas. That exposes somebody to level, and it may not have cost that man his job or anything, but it certainly could have, and it's a faux pas at best.
Even worse than this dinner story, the whole Don Johnson story came out because of one of these conference calls. The whole Don Johnson winning $15 million in Atlantic City, that wasn't this year, that was a few years back, but that whole story came out because of a conference call where they were trying to explain to investors why their quarter was so bad because this guy...
You know, what's kind of interesting is, and I don't disagree with Ken. I rarely ever disagree with Ken. I've learned better than that. But the, this guy, this publisher of Vice, he relishes in this type of publicity. And that's the thing what you find
so
nowadays.
So does Don.
Yeah, some of these guys...
Don's had some 200,000 dinners at least.
Yeah, I mean, some of these guys really relish in this kind of publicity. You know, look at I dropped... You know, and this guy has 300,000.
Right, he can then justify it as a deductible expense.
Right, I mean, it was build it back to Vice or his magazine, his website or whatever. So, it's... I agree. It was just very strange. And I think MGM had to know... You know who the customer was. They knew who this person was. So it was just strange the way it all happened.
All right, we got about 3 minutes left. There was some guys playing craps at Bellagio, Jeffrey. How did that one all go down?
Well, they weren't playing. Playing means this.
I play video poker.
Yes, yes, yes. You don't cheat, that we know of. And the
I don't that's the way to get invited back.
Well, there went his Christmas present.
Yeah, right. Seriously, make a long story short. I guess two players and two dealers cooperated on the type of bet that is oral and
it's called a hop bet.
A hop bet. And which are much more frequent at the strip casinos than they are, I've noticed, in the, you know, outlier areas. And they would, you know, and if the hop bet was good, the guy would get paid. If the hop bet was bad, they'd forget about it. And so, and over the course of 2 years, they took $500,000. And as I mentioned to you earlier, the casino had said in their defense that this, the only way this could happen is a one in $200 billion chance. And I went, well, if it's that rare, I haven't seen their figures, so I have no idea. If it's that rare, how come it took you 2 years to figure out this was going on? And you had to make a related party state's evidence. So, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of a crazy story. I'm always leery of any time any news story reports the odds of something. Because,
calculated after the fact.
Yeah, yes. Invariably, the number's going to be wrong. Anyway, we welcome your input. We love your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered to you automatically every week at iTunes or Stitcher or YouTube or at my site, richardmunchkin.com. To get archives of all the episodes, every show ever done, you can find that at bobdancer.com.
Very good. Thank you, Ken Adams. Thank you, Jeffrey Compton. Thank you, Howard Stutz.
Thank you.
Thanks. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com
and RichardMunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.